Welcome to episode 43, now that we've looked it up, of Up and In, the Baseball Presenters podcast. We had to figure out where we are at. We're at 43, people.
That's ridiculous.
In way too cold DeKalb, Illinois, I'm Kevin Goldstein, and joining us for the last time this spring, the man who's had enough of Arizona. It is, and he's playing hurt, people. It's Jason Parks. Jason, say hello to the internet.
Howdy. Yes, oh, I am.
How are you,
I'm Jason? On the DL. I'm on the DL.
What happened to you?
Just, I've been out in the sun a lot. I mean, yesterday was really warm out here, and I was at a bad angle, and the sun just abused me all day long. Got home and just thought it was okay. Woke up today and just wasn't okay. But I'll be okay. I'm out of here in 2 days, or I leave tomorrow night.
Nice. So we have a good show for you. We lost our main guest. We were going to be joined for this special preview episode by Dan Evans, the former Los Angeles Dodgers general manager, who is now an agent and actually in charge of an agency with Paragon Sports. And Dan had some family issues to deal with. So we're going to have Dan Evans on in the future, possibly as early as next week. Dan's a good guy. Dan is also a good friend of mine. And so I look forward to having him on. But we do have one guest. We have our listener of the week. And it's going to be Diane Furstman. And Diane is one of the top-rated Scrabble players in the world. And she's going to talk to us about Scrabble. And we're going to talk about tiles and words that have Q's in them and two-letter words and people who vomit and spit in a bag while you play them across the table. But it's a fun interview. Part of it. Yeah, it's interesting stuff. And it's a personal thing for me. I'm always kind of fascinated and drawn to and interested in people who are kind of obsessed and really good at one thing. And I don't really care what that one thing is. And so it was a fun interview, and we thank Diane for joining us. We're going to, of course, do the email. We're going to talk about it's opening day, Jason.
Is it?
They're playing baseball.
What day is it today?
Well, today's Wednesday, but people will be listening to this on Thursday.
And oh, that's right.
We're going to talk about we're going to do a little season preview, and we're going to run through the divisions and make our picks. Very simple. People like picks. Picks are kind of silly. People like them, and it's a fun way to talk about seasons. We're going to do our picks for the American League and the National League. And then you'll listen to Diane talk about Scrabble, and we'll talk about our musical guest. A true legend is our musical guest. I'm very excited about this. And then we'll talk about what we're drinking and stuff like that, and Jason's trip and my trip for the weekend, and we'll wrap things up. So let's get some housekeeping out of the way, Jason.
Okay.
If you want to email us, and we always get tons of good email, keep them coming, people. podcast@baseballperspectives.com. They end up in my inbox, and I share the good ones with Jason. Just that's how it works. Jason, we don't want Jason reading all your emails.
If you want to even read the ones you send me.
If you want to follow us on Twitter, I am at Kevin_Goldstein, and Jason and his more than 2,000 followers.
Yeah, I'm at 2,100 now.
Is it Professor Parks? We have a Facebook.
Can't shake him.
Go to the Facebook thing and then do look for Up and In the Baseball Perspectives podcast. Jason, of course, has his Rangers-centric website where you can get in-depth scouting reports on all the players he's seeing and will be seeing throughout the year, and that is at TexasFarmReview.com. And you should be going there and giving him your money. And speaking of giving us money, you know, we announced last week the prediction contest where you can give a little money to Doctors Without Borders, predict the season, win some prizes. And we got a nice response to it, but not nice enough. We want more of your money. I don't want it. Jason doesn't want it. We want to give it to Doctors Without Borders. And so if you go to our website, go to baseballperspectives.com, and you can see there's a green banner there telling you with a link there on how you can enter. You give them some money. You'll get instructions on how to enter. It's just a simple predict the standings kind of thing. Predict the eighth playoff teams, and who's going to win the World Series, and Elvis Andrus's slugging percentage, and you can be entered into a contest for all sorts of great prizes. We have subscriptions to the website. We have copies of Baseball Prospectus 2012 when it comes out, Listener of the Week appearance, signed copy of Forging Genius, Stephen Goldman, our editor-in-chief's wonderful, wonderful biography on Casey Stengel. Fascinating book. We have a signed copy of The Extra 2% by former podcast guest Jonah Carey. We have a signed copy of the 2012 Newberg Report by Jamie Newberg. If you're a Rangers fan, that'll be a fun one. And we have some new prizes that have entered the fray, if you will. One is an autographed copy of Field of Schemes, which is one of our editors and writers, Neil DeMaus, his great book about the bullshit that is public financing for stadiums. We have our former podcast guest, Scott Drucker, who got some bad news this week. He got released by the Detroit Tigers. But
Oh, I didn't
nonetheless,
know
he has donated an autographed bobblehead doll. Now, if you are a bobblehead doll collector, and I know a lot of people do that, but I'm sure there are some rarities in your collection. You probably don't even know there's a Scott Drucker bobblehead doll in existence. It was put out when he was pitching for an indie league team. I have one. Super rare bobblehead doll of Scott Drucker. And then the great people at Roto Logo, who he is a graphic designer, and for a small fee, he will design a team logo for your fantasy baseball team. And he has donated one custom fantasy team logo for one of the winners of our contest. So again, the website is firstgiving.com/fundraiser/up-and-in. Or again, if you just go to the website, there's like a green banner at the top that's going to point you right there. If you listen to this show, give them money. It's an order at this point. Give them money. If you've listened to the show, if you're a point niner, you're pushing right around 100 hours of listening to us at this point.
Jesus Christ, that's insane.
All I'm asking for is 10 cents an hour. That's all we're asking for. 10 cents an hour, $10, enter the contest, win some prizes. So, with that out of the way, Jason, let's get to some email.
Okay.
Our first email comes from our good friend Jay. And Jay is a New Yorker. Actually, I think Jay lives in New Jersey, but kind of acts like a New Yorker. And he has tattoos, and
They do.
he
They
listens to
do.
punk rock, and unfortunately, he listens to New York punk rock and that kind of steroid aggro bullshit instead of good music. But Jay's a good dude. And Jay says, "Hello, Captain Jason. First, let me thank you for indulging my love for both baseball and crystal meth." So.
Course. That's why I'm here.
The fact that the podcast has provided me with the insight that crystal meth can enhance my scouting abilities is priceless.
It can.
On to my question. Can you think of a prospect or major leaguer that literally ate his way out of organized baseball? A player that reached a level of fat that simply made him no longer able to play a short time after being an average or above average player? Keep on drinking, regards, Jim. Let's talk
I
about fat
can.
dudes. Well, go ahead. I have some as well.
Well, Bartolo Colon ate his way out of baseball.
Bartolo Colon certainly ate his way out of a career. He's back.
He's still fat.
He's back.
And he's not really back. You know what I mean?
I know. There's been all sorts of talk, and he's had some good spring outings. And I'm sure he'll have some effective outings here and there, for the Yankees. But there was all these talk.
Oh, he was dealing in the DR.
Yeah,
I
he was
mean,
dealing.
that was legit.
At the same time, he was like losing like three or four ticks in his fastball by the fourth inning.
Yeah.
He's fat.
He was sweating a ton.
But I mean, there are players. I was actually I threw this question to Stephen Goldman because I knew he'd be interesting, and Stephen Goldman pointed me to a player named Shanty Hogan, who was a catcher in the late 20s and during the 30s, who was a I mean I never heard of Shanty Hogan. But he was a pretty great player if you look at the numbers. He finished eighth in the MVP voting in 1928, playing for the Giants. He hit 333 and had three more years where he hit over 300 as a catcher. And then he kind of falls off the wagon really quick in his 20s. And Steven says it's just because he got fat and just ate his way out of baseball. There are plenty of prospects who have hurt their development. And the first guy that came to mind for me was Landon Powell, who is, of course, a backup catcher now for Oakland, who. I mean, this guy's weight has gone up and down. I mean, there was a point where, he was probably right around 300 pounds.
Yeah, that's big.
And it was just massive. And he was always kind of a big, pudgy guy. And it just comes to the territory in a way where I remember talking to someone when Landon Powell was coming up through the draft, and he was a first-round pick and, probably the best college catcher in the country. And I was talking to a scouting director, and he said, I don't know if I'd touch him. And I said, why not? He says, because I've seen his dad. And I said, what do you mean? He
Yeah.
says, Dad is just unbelievable. Dad's like four spins. Dad's huge. And you worry about the gene pool there. And Landon's done all sorts of stuff. I know at one point he did the whole what's the stuff with the ads with the football players, Nutrisystem for men or whatever. And had success with it, but it's always been a problem. But there are plenty of players. You know, Walter Young was a really good prospect who was just seen as a really huge guy, and then he became a too huge guy. He was coming up with the Pirates and then the Orioles and was, you know, a slugging first baseman and was like, you know, 6'4", 260. And you're like, look at that guy, he's huge. And then next thing you know, he's like 6'4", 300. And then you go, look at that guy, he's fat. And it's
Yeah,
kind
I
of a
mean, Drew
story.
Meyer was the same way with the Rangers. I mean, he was a terrible first round draft pick to begin with, but he got really fat.
Yeah, I think he went. Didn't he go to school at South Carolina with Landon Powell?
Yeah.
And
Yeah, they just ate together.
he was in someone's camp this year, if I remember right. And
The Stros, I think.
yeah, and you're right, he did get pudgy.
He
So
got pudgy. Well, when I think of that question, I think of, you know, this the first person that pops into my head is a guy who, you know, was a first ballot Hall of Famer in Tony Gwynn. And I always think about how good he could have been beyond you know, his 330 average or whatever, if he had the speed that he had when he first came up before he became just a fat mess.
yeah, and people forget, you know, what Tony Gwynn was when he came up, and what even he was a plus plus runner. I mean, he was crazy
He
fast,
can
and
fly.
I
He can
mean,
cover a lot of ground in the outfield. He's a stolen base threat. I mean, how many hits would he have been able to carve out a year if he
had
you know,
legs.
had the legs still? I mean, what, he'd be able to hit maybe 15, 20 points higher?
Yeah, I mean, Tony
It's crazy.
Gwynn's you know, arguably his best year came when he was 27. He had 370, but he stole 56 bases, and he had
Yeah.
13 triples, you know,
Right.
and won a gold glove, and we all know he got fat. Have you seen Tony Gwynn now that he hasn't been
Yeah.
playing for about 10 years?
Yeah, I have.
He's big.
I actually saw him going to the Hall of Fame. I was there.
Oh, okay. I mean,
He was huge.
he's fat, and so
He has a really big head,
it
too.
happens. He does have a large head. So our next question comes from Avery. Avery's in Kansas City, and maybe I'll see Avery on Saturday. Who knows? All are welcome. Look for the guy in the hat. And Avery says, Kevin and Jason, I stumbled upon your podcast on episode 23 while wandering around the BP website. Welcome as a wanderer. As an insomniac, I must thank you for two reasons. First, your podcast helped me pass away the waning hours of the evening when everyone else I know is peacefully asleep. Second, I have found the dulcet tones of Professor Parks tend to magically lull me to sleep.
No.
You have so many varying effects on people.
I
Some people want to punch you, you put other people to sleep. It's amazing.
know. I know.
It's
It's
just
remarkable.
remarkable. On to baseball. This is a fun question. Do you ever feel jilted by a prospect that you've been touting for years who finally gains national recognition? This has happened to me with Salvador Perez. It kind of feels like when your favorite new indie band goes national. I found the Morning Benders in a small club in Berkeley in 2008 while I was living in San Francisco. I spent the next 2 years telling everyone how much I enjoyed them. Then I hear excuses on a flippin' Reese's commercial, and the scene kids start blasting the new album, Big Echo. Is there something wrong with me now that I have a hard time listening to this band I used to thoroughly enjoy? They've abandoned me for the glamour of foil wrapped chocolate and peanut buttery treats. And he lets us know he's drinking Schlitz like any good hipster wannabe. I know how you feel, but it's okay. You can still say I saw him first. You can still say I knew him when. You know, I st and I'm fine with it. I mean, I still get a lot of credit for things, and I'm which is what you want. You know, I'm. People, a lot of people still know me as the Nepali Feliz guy.
Yeah, I was about to say we might share a player here because when the Atlanta trade went down, I remember looking at the list going, man, Feliz is going to be the best one out of this group. I mean, because I knew about him already. And when I first got to see him, I was like, yeah, this guy's the ticket. And I know that you were really high on him too. And now he's become, you know, everybody has seen him.
Yeah, I mean, there's
Everybody
all
knows
sorts
who
of
he
guys. I
is.
mean, I had Clayton Kershaw, like, I don't know, 12th or so on a top 100 after he just pitched in the Gulf Coast League, and people gave me all sorts of crap. You know, I had Pablo Sandoval, I had Kung Fu Panda in my Giants top 10 when I don't think he was on anyone else's Giants top 30. You know, and so you always have your guys, and just be proud. You can always play that game. I still love the Pixies, but it doesn't mean I can't say, oh yeah, I saw him at the Wrath in Boston with like 50 people, like a snobby smartass. You can still do it. Don't abandon them. just you have to need to leverage their popularity to help prove your coolness.
Right, and I like Sal Perez a lot too. That's he's a damn fine player.
Yeah, I do like Salvador Perez, and I will be seeing him Saturday. Our next email
Lucky you.
is from Jerry, and Jerry's in Toronto, which is in Canada.
Good call.
Which is and Canada is the home country of Jonah Carey, who of course has ripped off our podcast. Now, Jerry goes
And our
on,
guest.
and our guest, he had Jorge on this
I
week.
know. I
What the
that's
hell?
well no, that's on Jorge. That's who he is. I blame him.
I did
I don't
Rocco.
blame Jonah.
Rocco, you remember Rocco? We had Rocco on the podcast. Rocco started a podcast.
Really?
I was on Rocco's podcast this week.
That's cool. Good for him.
Hey, everyone start. If you're a guest on the
Another one
show,
I won't listen to.
if you're a guest on the show, you start a podcast. I'm telling you, in a couple of weeks, Diane Feinstein's gonna have the Scrabble podcast.
I'd like to go on that.
We're like kingmakers. But let's get to Jerry's email. Jerry says, "I'm writing in response to the email question from the week from episode 42, asking about getting scouts to visit the writers' New York Penn League scouting reports. In my experience, scouts are trained to only believe their own eyes and not to be influenced by others, even Baseball Prospectus or Baseball America and the like. You often mention your own scouting contacts. Do some of them refuse to read your writings on scouting so they won't be influenced by you?"
No.
I don't know of anyone who specifically told me they don't read me. I'm sure some of them don't. But
sure, that's preference.
But
it's, yeah. Scouts, their job is to gather information on a player. Yes, they're going to trust their eyes. Yes, in-person observation is their job. But I mean, every scout I've ever spoken with is just hungry for knowledge about the players they're looking at. And if that means going to a fan website, then they're going to go to a fan website.
Yeah, and I've certainly had scouts call me and go, "Have you seen this player?" I go, "Yeah. What have you heard about him? Because I loved him, and I haven't seen anything about him." And I go, "Well, I do love him, and here's why." Or I'll say, "No, well, people don't love him, and you're on an island." And sometimes they're looking for, just a general consensus from what I'm hearing, because if they call me, I can go, chances are fairly good. I can say, yeah, I've talked to someone who've seen him, or I've talked to a few people who've seen him. And it can kind of help validate their feelings or let them see just how, out there or separate from the pack they are on the guy. I don't know if I've ever changed a guy's mind. I'm almost sure I haven't, but they do kind of want to get a feel for that at times. Our next email comes from Mike, and Mike says, "Kevin and the Professor." Everyone calls you the Professor, and you don't even like it.
I don't. Well, I didn't create it. It's not. Whatever.
Yeah, you don't get to make your own name. But Mike goes on, "It's been very interesting listening to you discuss scouting metrics and observations about prospects and upcoming players in the draft. In episode 42, you touched on the difficulty of projecting and analyzing older and more experienced players, like college kids against 17-year-old international signings. My question is this. If you were faced having to scout Jim Morris, the man behind the rookie, how would you start? Is even possible to traditionally scout a 35-year-old who hasn't moved up the ladder and played baseball since high school? What would you look for in a player with such an unusual background? Thanks and keep up the good work." So, Jason, let's show up with a – we're going to make someone up, okay?
Okay.
Now, without getting into detail, Jason, there are times where there are people in this game who ask if you can go see a player and tell them what you think.
Yes.
Let's say one of those people calls you up and says, "There's some guy in Brooklyn who hasn't played since high school. He's in his mid-30s, but he throws 97 miles an hour. He's going to go pitch for some people. Will you go look at him and tell us what you think?"
Yep.
How would you look at that guy? How would you go into looking at that guy different than how you would look into watching 19-year-old Rangers or Royals prospects pitch?
I think it'd be difficult, but I mean, the easiest part of scouting a pitcher is present velocity. And if he's throwing in the mid-90s, that's something that's very tangible. That's easy to scout. You know, okay, here's a guy who hasn't pitched since high school, therefore he probably hasn't had any kind of instruction since high school. He's mature. There's not a ton of projection, if any, aside from what a professional coach might be able to bring to the table. But he's throwing 95 miles an hour now. That's real. He's throwing 95. That's something that you don't really have to look at with an abstract lens. I mean, that's happening. So that aspect, I think, would be rather simple. I think the difficult part would be establishing, is there anything else to the game? And then the makeup. Now, I don't mean, is he going to drink and drive or punch his girlfriend. I don't care about that. The want, to pitch at the major league level after, being at a different place in life than you are when you're a teenager or coming out of college. It's a different ball game, Does he want to be there? Is this a guy who is going to be able to handle that sort of pressure being around, being 10 years senior to most of the people on the staff? I mean, that's what I would look at. If the present stuff is there, then I think that scouting the baseball side of it would be the easier part. I think scouting the emotional side would be the more challenging.
Yeah, it'd be interesting, and I guess you'd want to see what he had beyond the fastball and figure out, can we teach him or develop those pitches despite the fact that he's not only is he not physically maturing, but he's physically declining.
I'd want to know what he threw in high school, and what, how it was graded then. I'd want to know why he didn't pursue baseball. Again, that plays into more of the emotional side. Why did, I mean, was it, a family situation? Did you just not have the heart? Why do you have the heart now? I mean, I would ask those sort of questions. If there was a good breaking ball in high school, then, if you're throwing 95, I'd like to think that the arm would still have a good breaking ball in it.
Yeah,
You know, the wrist
definitely.
would, it, the wrist has it or it doesn't, and it would probably still have it if it had it in the past. So as I said, I don't really think that the baseball part would be as difficult if you're throwing 95. I think it would be, the emotional component.
That's a fun question, though.
Yeah, I liked it.
So our next question comes from Byron, and Byron says, in this week's podcast, Kevin lamented that good athletes like Ryan Braun are bad fielders and wondered why that is. It raised an issue that stuck in my craw for years. Why are pitchers such horrible hitters? Clearly, they're good athletes. On their high school or college teams, they likely pitched, hit, and played the field and were probably the best at all three. I've always heard the stories that pitchers have to focus on pitching, BP would hurt them, etc., and I've never really bought it. So what's the real story? Why can't most pitchers hit? Well, Byron, it's time for you to buy it. I realize you haven't bought it, but pitchers have to focus on pitching, and they can't develop as hitters and pitchers. You just can't. There's no time for that. And the other lesson here is baseball really is that damn hard.
Hitting a baseball is thought to be the hardest thing in any sport, the hardest thing to accomplish. The best hitters in the world miss the ball 70% of the time,
And
or don't get
so,
a hit 70% of the time.
right, I mean,
It's remarkable.
there are plenty of really tons of these pitchers who can't hit were great players. I remember, just to show off my age here, when I was in high school, Kent Merker, who was the best high school pitcher in the country at the time and was the top pick of the Braves that year, was in my conference. And when he wasn't pitching, he was their first baseman and hit third and was a monster. And he didn't hit at all in the big leagues. Not even close. And so the distance is just, it's ridiculous. You cannot do it. And all sorts of players were great, great hitters in high school, and many of them were really, really good in college. And it just didn't work for them because they weren't able to work at it. And you think about, anyway, Casey Kelly, Kyle Drabek had first round talent as a shortstop. And if
Sure.
he can't, I mean, I don't think he can hit right now. I doubt he could hit. I mean, he probably can hit better than your average pitcher, maybe, but that's it. Think about a guy like John Van Benschoten, who was the first round pick of the Pirates in 2001, who I may get this wrong, so bear with me, but he either led or was awfully close to leading the NCAA in home runs at Ohio University. And a lot of people thought he should go off the board as an outfielder, as a power hitting outfielder, but he didn't. He went off as a pitcher. And he didn't play much, but his big league numbers, he went 2 for 21 with 8 strikeouts. Did have a home run. But it's not, has nothing to do with athleticism. It has to do with just how hard baseball is. And you can't focus half-ass on hitting and turn into anything like a decent big league hitter.
Well, look what hitting is. I mean, hitting, like pitching, is a product of, repetition, finding your timing, your comfort, and that comes through repetition. And if you're not, professional hitters focus on hitting. They spend a lot of time in the cages before, after games. They take tons of hacks. It takes them, thousands of hours to get their swing down. And if you're a pitcher and you're trying to work on the repetition, of your mechanics and trying to stay get your muscle memory for that and work on that aspect of it. But to focus on the hitting is just too much. There's not enough hours in the day to do all of that. It's right. It just doesn't happen.
So Brian, you say you've always heard the stories and you've never really bought it. It's time to buy it.
Buy it.
Our next email comes from Chris. Chris says, did you hear that ding? Wasn't that fun? That was a text message. Let's see who it's from.
Probably going to name drop here, aren't you?
Let's hope so. I'm going to unlock my phone. It's from Christina Carl.
Hey, what's she doing?
There you go. Oh, I was talking about some stuff. There you go. Thanks for emailing. And Chris, good to have you on the podcast, Christina. And Chris emails us and says, a big fan of the podcast. I start off at the episode with Steve Albini, and I've been jumping all over catching up. I listen during my commute as well as my lunch break, which helps immensely because there's something about NAMBLA jokes that put me in the right frame of mind for my job in social services, which is for the most part eye-opening and, as a natural extension of that, soul-crushing. I can't even imagine that job. I mean, God bless you, Chris. You are a saint. Chris goes on and says, I do have a non-baseball related question for yourself and the good professor. I was listening to an episode where Jason made a comment about Ayn Rand not being intelligent or writing intelligently. And I believe I would add that she is a fascist. This made me immediately ecstatic because I think that her ethos is harmful and in no way moves humanity forward. I'm with you, Chris. I was wondering what other authors have obvious overarching societal themes in their works that you think, as Jason puts it, are regressive. Specifically, I'm talking about within the realm of fiction as pundits giving themselves hand jobs praying to be authors could take up a 2-hour show. And he signs it, Man of the People. And indeed you are, Chris. Jason, what other authors offend you?
Well, I mean, we've talked about this on the podcast before, and I'm definitely not a fan of J.D. Salinger at all.
Yeah, we had Keith Law, and all three of us said we don't like Catcher in the Rye.
And, I mean, people just wax on and on and on about, you know, how important that is, and I just don't see it. I don't get it. We spent 30 minutes talking about it. It's just I'll never get it. You can't convince me that it's worth a shit, because I don't think it is. This is a little different, but, you know, like, reading Dave Eggers really bothers me.
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of, I mean, look, just throw it out there, you know, hyper intelligent guy, just
sure,
really, 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 effectual. I get it. All right. That I'm not really going to bash that, but I will say that when I read him, it's like, man, this guy's just showing off. This is masturbation, you know? And it turns me off a great deal. He's writing for himself, it seems. Whereas a lot of the other postmodernists, even though they have similar vocabulary, similar minds, I don't ever get the sense that it's just, you know, masturbation. I never get like that masturbatory solipsism, you know, from Wallace, even though he's superior to Eggers in every way.
Well, there you go. So there, we've ripped some more authors for you. I don't know if I have a problem with others on a deep level as far as ethos. I find Stephen King's work offensive, but that's just because it's bad.
Yeah, no, I haven't read a lot of Stephen King. I mean, I read some when I was, you know, maybe in junior high, and it had the desired effect, which I guess is to make your heart race just a little bit for a short amount of time. But it didn't have any wide, you know, reach with me at all. I don't think it has wide reach with anybody, or I would hope it doesn't, or I don't see how it's possible, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know anybody who reads The Stand and carries it with them the rest of their life.
Our next email comes from Mark in Cleveland. And Mark says, greetings, Kevin and Jason. First off, thank you for the constantly terrific work with the podcast. Not sure if you're listening to this show or something else or you confuse us with. As a recent college grad hit with the double whammy of a long commute coupled with a shitty data entry job, I have a lot of dead time. I discovered your podcast a few weeks ago, and I've flown through the back catalog at a pace you'd probably deem unhealthy.
Yeah,
we would.
I assume so.
For instance, and here we go again with how people react to you. For instance, Jason has gone from someone I have liked to punch in the face to someone I'd like to buy the beer over the course of just a few days.
Well, that's usually about the pace that it takes, yes.
I've bought Jason beers, and then the same night I wanted to punch him in the face. I know where you're at. Mark goes on. Also, as a man of Italian heritage, I'd warn Kevin to be weary of anyone who willingly offers up their gravy recipe. as has been my experience that these are usually top secret and only passed to select people. My grandmother, who is full-blooded Sicilian, won't even teach her recipe to her family because she knows they'd fuck it up.
That hits home because my best friend is a Mexican, and her mother refuses to show her how to make tortillas. She says you'll just fuck them up. You'll just ruin the family name. So she just doesn't show her. And it's a damn shame because this woman, her tortillas are not human. I mean, they're not normal. They are. Oh my God, I just came.
Mark goes on, I have an actual baseball question. As a lifelong Clevelander and Indians fan, I have recently gone to great depths to keep tabs on their farm, and I have found adequate resources to follow a majority of the minor leagues. But when it comes to rookie ball, I only get a roster and some box scores. Is there a website or any other medium you'd recommend that adequately covers the Arizona and Gulf Coast leagues? Keep up the good work. I'd rate it 5 stars, but I don't like the iTunes rankings crap, as it can only lead to a bunch of hipsters downloading your stuff due to your high rating in the explicit sports niche. First of all, rank it 5 stars. We welcome the hipsters.
We want that.
We're fine
we
with
want
that.
That.
It's all about growing the fame. But let's talk about the complex leagues. Obviously, you know, you can see the complex league box scores and you can see the rosters and the way they're treated on places like, you know, like MILB.com and places like that. I mean, they're right there with everybody else. Just like you can click on the Pacific Coast League box scores, you can click on the Gulf Coast League box scores, and just like you can see the Texas League stats, you can see the Arizona Complex League stats. But they really kind of aren't the same in the sense that you know, the games are not – you can go to the games, but they're not per se open to the public. There's no ticket sales. There's no hot dogs. There's no beer.
There's nobody there.
There's no Coke. There's no humans. It's just people playing on a field. I mean, you'll go to high school games in Cleveland that have more people than a complex league game. But and so no one's really covering games. Them.
No, there's nothing to – no.
But they're fun to go to if you ever get a chance.
They're great. They're the best. I absolutely love them.
You know how much Jason loves watching 17-year-olds run around playing baseball. And so – I mean,
we're not playing baseball.
Yeah, really.
It doesn't matter.
But – you know, they tend to start, I know they say they start them later in Arizona because of the heat, but they tend to start at noon in Florida. And a lot of scouts go to that game just because they want to watch some baseball and then grab something to eat and come back for the Florida State League game that they're covering. But no, there is no actual coverage. There's no press. There's no roster sheets. It's a very, I don't want to say casual, but it's a very,
it's developmental. I mean,
it's not public friendly. It's not designed for you to go to.
No, I've seen games stopped and instruction take place. I mean, that's the beauty of it. I mean, it's not exactly extended spring training. It's a little more formal than that, but it's basically the same thing.
Yeah, and so that's why. I mean, you know, you can basically just follow the stats and count on people like Jason and I talking to people inside the game to tell you about the players. Right, Jason?
Yeah.
And for more information on Rangers rookie players, TexasFarmReview.com.
Jesus Christ. You're too comfortable doing that stuff.
Our
I just want you to know that.
Comes from Barry, and Barry is in Orem, Utah.
Uh-huh.
And Barry says, hi, guys. My son and I were at the local new and used sporting goods store in Orem purchasing batting gloves for the upcoming Super League season. I don't know what Super League is, but it sounds super.
I'm going to scout it.
The manager of the store asked my son if he had ever met a professional ball player and then introduced us to one Mark Pawlak. Mark then proceeded to inform us that he's working at the store. He's in between tryouts for several major league teams. And I quickly realized I'm familiar with his story as a former employer of mine as a friend of his. I'm sure you know his story well. He was a 2006 first round pick by the Cubs, a pitcher, had a mysterious PlayStation injury and a large signing bonus, etc. He's now 25, which seems ancient for someone trying to get back into the game. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on someone in this situation. What are his chances of gaining confidence of any major league team? Anyway, I dig the podcast and the entertainment, the insight you offer. I am a painting contractor. He paints. And if you move to DeKalb, Barry,
we contract.
I need my house painted. I've lost all my employees since the economy lost its vigor, so I work by myself and keep earbuds in all day. The podcast brings a silver lining to my touch of gray work days. Well, I hope you're painting right now as you listen to this. And you know, for a guy like Mark Pawlak, it's such a funny situation. And it's a cliche, but it's totally true, man. It just takes one team. And look, Mark didn't pick
Watching one good outing.
right, and or even just remembering. There's one team somewhere that has some scout who remembers what, 6 years ago, 7 years ago, seeing Mark pitch in high school in Utah when he was a monster, and is just saying, "Oh, can we get that for nothing? We should at least give it a shot." And he convinces someone it happens. And you just hope that there's not somebody else with that team who saw Mark actually pitch for the Cubs when he pitched for Boise every year because he can get healthy and pitch in a full season league, or who saw him in, I believe it was a brief comeback with the Reds, to come back and go, "Oh, don't sign him, he sucks." But it just takes one out of 30. And there is, luckily for him, there is some cachet to him being a first round pick, to him once being something, to at one time there were teams that thought he could be great. That's going to help him. I don't know if he'll get
Sure.
another shot or not, because I think he's pretty past his last shot. I imagine he'd have to do something in indie ball first, but it could happen. I mean, and we're just talking about getting a shot. We're not talking about him pitching the big leagues, just getting a shot.
If he wants it bad enough,
And
keeps at it,
yeah.
could happen.
And Barry finished, Kevin. The music selections are great. I'm wondering if you're a fan of Mike Watt and of Bad Brains. Well, if you go back to the podcast, Barry, Jason told a story of eating some barbecue with Mike Watt.
Yeah. I served him beef with a side of beef. It was excellent.
And so yeah, no, I'm a fan of the Minutemen. I like some of Mike's kind of whatever you call those solo albums he does with 8 million different musicians. Those collaboration pieces he does. But he's also one of those people who I think I tend to like him as a dude better than some of his music. I think he's probably one of the most awesome dudes in music. So I'm a big fan. And Bad Brains, I liked a lot of the DC Punk, and they were very unique in the DC Punk scene in the sense that, most of the DC Punk scene was kind of defined by the whole, Minor Threat, straight edge scene, which I could live without as someone who likes to drink and smoke. And I mean, Bad Brains was more of a pure straight ahead punk band, with the unique aspect of course, them being African American. They did some great stuff. So yeah, big Bad Brains fan. So now we talked about Mike Watt, Bad Brains, and Mark Pawelek in one email. It's time to
It
take a
was a
break.
good email.
That was a good one. We'll take a break and we'll come back. Maybe Jason will throw up while we're gone.
Maybe.
And then we'll talk about baseball. We'll run through the American League and the National League and make our predictions for the 2011 baseball season. So stick around. Welcome back to the podcast. Jason, we're going to get right into our predictions for the 2011 season, but I want to preview a couple things.
Okay.
I just got a girl just pulled up to our house and threw an envelope in our mailbox.
Was it more secret information for you?
No, but we're going to
Like
read
last time?
what this card says. It's during our goofy segment.
Good, we
And
needed something for that.
somebody in between us recording segments just gave $134.62 to Doctors
Good
Without
total.
Borders.
Interesting total.
So, and thank you to C. Jones, whoever you are, for donating that much. But you know what? That's not what it's about. Thank you to the person who donated $6.66. Thank you to everyone who gave anything. But Jason, it's baseball
Yes.
time.
Yeah,
No more, no
it
more,
always is.
no more of that bullshit in Arizona. No,
No, I still have a little bit more.
and you still some more. But you know what I mean? It's time to get the games. It's time to get the season started. And thank God, because I need something to write about. And you get to the point where you're very excited baseball started, and then by the end of March, you're like, okay, let's just get this going already. But yes. It's time. We're going to do what people want. We're going to give the people what they want. I'm going to clap because it's annoying. And we're going to predict the season. We're going to start with the American League. And because this is the way they're always listed, why are they always listed East, Central, West? You ever thought about that?
Well, because everything starts on the East Coast, as it should.
So we'll start in the East Coast. And we'll start in the American League East. And I think there's a two-team race between the Red Sox and the Yankees. Do you agree with that before we go on?
No.
Okay. You just think it's a one-team race or a three-team
yes.
race? You think it's a one-team race?
No, I think
race?
It's yes.
And that one team is?
It's the Sox.
Okay.
I think that there is a three-team race for who gets to finish second in that division and possibly get the wild card.
Wow. I'm interested.
Yeah.
And those three teams are the Yankees, the Rays, and?
I think that the Blue Jays are going to overperform.
Why?
Feeling. I think they have some young talent that's going to emerge. I don't know. I mean, I think that the Rays are better on paper. I think that the Jays are going to overperform and shock some people. I don't think that they're going to win the division. I don't think that they're going to win the wild card, really. I picked them to finish third in the division, so I think that would be a big victory for them.
I think they're going to finish in last place.
I think that's entirely possible as well.
I do think it's kind of a two-team race. I do like the Red Sox better than the Yankees just because they have fewer holes in their roster. But let's talk about the Rays for a second, Jason, in the sense that we've gone over this, about how the Rays are everybody's favorite little team. And you know, oh, they're so smart and cute and whatnot, and they can do no wrong, and they're run by smart people, and blah, blah, blah. I just think they're kind of going to be an above 500 team, but not much more.
Yeah, I don't have a strong feeling either way. I mean, I like in that division, I think, as I said, I think that they have more talent than the Jays, but I think the Jays are going to surprise some people. And I think Showalter is going to keep Baltimore in the cellar.
I like Baltimore to build optimism this year. I think Baltimore is a team that could win 80 games. And that would, I think, go a long way. And just, I mean, when you're a constantly shitty team, you know, what the Rays did in 08 is not the norm. When you're a constantly right. shitty team, you're trying to not be a constantly shitty team. You need that year, that 1 year where you go from being embarrassing to no longer embarrassing. That 1 year where you can be just get to the point where teams go, oh, crap, we got to go to Baltimore. That's going to be tough. That's what they're going to get this year. And I think Baltimore's going to flirt with 500. I like the young talent. I think they're going to have more coming, at least on the pitching level. And yes. And I think that, you know, they're going to get some improvements from some of their young players, guys like Wieters and Jones. I like Baltimore quite a bit.
Showalter will fuck it up.
So, but the funny thing is, I mean, I think the Red Sox are on paper, if you will, to use that cliche, the best team in baseball.
I think so. I think it's at least from on the off. I mean, look, I said last year when the signings were coming in that I think that their pitching staff, at least the starters, there's some question marks there still. I guess every team's just one injury away from taking a big step back. I think losing a guy like Lester could really, really hurt the Red Sox. I think on offense they're gonna put up video game numbers. I think Crawford and Gonzalez are just gonna be crazy.
And that's the thing. I mean, last year, I'm almost certain, I'd have to look it up, but I'm almost certain I picked the Red Sox to win the World Series. And you know what? It was a good pick at the time, but that didn't happen because they got just truckloads of injuries, nonstop injuries. And as we all know, when you get guys injured and you replace them with replacement level players, you don't make the playoffs. And so, I mean, it's one of the reasons these are so, I don't know, these are so kind of tentative and just throwing it out there. And it's fun to talk about, but
sure,
you know, it's 162 games. It's 6 months. It's a nightmare. You know,
I'm not going to come on here in 8 months or whatever, 7 months, and when the Jays lose 105 games and talk about how I picked the Jays to finish third, it's just going to go away.
No, I will. I'll bring it up.
It's just going to go away.
So
I think they're going to win like 80 games, but they're probably going to win like 45. Watch.
You're going to go 45 and 117. That'd be awesome.
awesome.
Kyle Drabik goes. Kyle Drabik's gonna go 17-6, but they're gonna go 45-117.
Oh,
So
he's not gonna like playing for a losing team. He'll pop.
now, a far more interesting division is, of course, the American League Central,
Yeah,
where,
it's open.
I mean, the one of the funnest things is, and again, I'm not married to what Pecota says. I certainly look at it and I respect it, but I can think it. I can think they're wrong if I want to. But they have the White Sox, the Twins, and the Tigers all within 0.3 wins of each other. That's how even it sees this. I mean, I think the White Sox are the best team in that division. And when I look at what it thinks those individual players will do, I think Adam Dunn will be better than that. I think Gordon Beckham is going to be way better than any sort of projection. I think the Gordon Beckham we saw in 2009 and the Gordon Beckham we saw in the second half of 2010 is the Gordon Beckham we're going to see all year this year. And so I like the White Sox in this division, but it's not like the Twins and Tigers stink.
No, not at all. It's going to be competitive. And that's what's going to, it's going to make it a great division, start to finish. I don't think a team's going to run away in that division. I don't think it's possible.
So who you got?
I gotta go with the Tigers.
Really?
Yeah.
Based on what?
Based on Leland smoking in the dugout. What? I gotta be honest here. That's why. I like Leland. I don't like the other managers as much.
Now we talked about the Blue Jays losing 117 games. How many games are the Royals going to lose?
Ooh, I don't see the Royals this year. I see them in 2013. That's when I see them.
Because
When I
this
look at the
year,
Royals, I can't even see this year.
it's bad. I mean, it is really, really, it's bad. I mean, you look at their rotation is all sorts of bad, and the lineup has all sorts of bad. And I mean, obviously, it's kind of a developmental year, even in the big leagues. They're gonna have all these rookie relievers with Tim Collins and Aaron Crow and Jeremy Jeffers
Yeah.
probably, but their rotation is like Luke Hochevar, Bruce Chen, Vince Mazzaro, Kyle Davies. It's not good, and it's going to be. This is the last bad year, but I think it could be monumentally bad, unless they decide to get funky and actually bring some of these kids up in the second half.
I don't see any reason to hold them back. I mean, I really don't. I understand,
Which is a
what
service
people
time thing.
say. I don't buy that.
Okay.
I don't, well, I wouldn't use that. I mean, they don't have any payroll commitments. I understand that, it's a great baseball town, first of all, and I think you just bring them up, let them start playing, get people excited about what the future is going to look like, not Jeff Francoeur. Nobody gives a shit about Jeff Francoeur. And I know you have to field a team. I understand
Yes, you
that.
do.
And by and large, he's not a bad guy to do that on a 1 year pop. My point
No.
is, and this has nothing to do with Francoeur because he's not taking anybody's position, that if I were a fan of Kansas City, which I guess I am now, especially their farm system, and I was a ticket buying fan, and you're selling me on the future, well, then I want to see it, especially if it's ready.
Yeah, I think it's gonna be an interesting case, and I think we talked about this last week. But what happens if it's June and Eric Hosmer's hitting 370 and slugging 600 at AAA?
He will be. All right. And if he's in the minors in June and he's doing that, then I think Kansas City fans have a reason to be upset about that. I mean, as I said, I'd want to see them.
It's going to be fun to watch. It's going to be fun to figure out because again, we've talked about this before, but I mean, the minor league system they have in Kansas City right now is tremendous. It's phenomenal. It's amazing. It's all that stuff. And now the process of turning that into something at the big league level is as fascinating a story as the Red Sox Yankees, to me at least.
It's interesting. Yeah. I mean, we've talked about that on the podcast quite a bit. Great system, no question. Transitioning that into major league results, that's there it's cloudy. What they're doing right now in the minors is not cloudy at all. It's remarkable.
It's
They are
phenomenal.
deep as shit. I'm telling you that, I'm on the backfields every day and I get to see, teams like the Padres and the Mariners and who have some decent upper level talent, and I get to see their low A squads, and there's just not a lot of talent on the field. Kansas City is deep. They are deep with you know, players that people haven't even heard of yet, and give those guys a couple of years and they're going to be, you know, names that more people know about. So, I mean, it's going to continue to get better. Now, that's great. That's a great thing to have. You have to start turning that into major league production. It has to happen. It's going to happen with Moose. It's going to happen with Hosmer. It'll eventually happen with Myers. Now you have four badass lefties. Well, not all of them are going to develop, you know, and you have to keep adding to that. You have to augment that minor league talent with major league acquisitions. It's going to have to be a part of Moore's game. I think that is what people should have some concern about.
But I think we can pretty comfortably say they're going to finish in last place.
I think they're going to finish in dead last.
Not just last, but dead last.
Yes. They're probably going to, yeah, they may have the worst record in the American League.
Now, I just got an email. As you were talking, I just got an email. The Omaha Storm Chasers roster has been announced, which is, of course, the AAA team of the Kansas City Royals. So the roster is in front of me. I'm opening it as we speak, and we can talk about this. And again, this is the AAA team, and there are some surprising names on it. Danny Duffy is on the AAA roster.
Duffy's look really, really sharp out here.
And, you know, we talked about having all those lefties at AA. No. Danny Duffy's on the AAA roster. Mike Montgomery is on the AAA roster.
I knew that.
So, you know, that leaves Dwyer and who am I missing out on? John Lamb on the AA roster.
Your boyfriend, John Lamb.
Right. So, and I believe I've been told that...
But he makes a good boyfriend, though.
That the tentative pitching matchup for the Futures game on Saturday is Lamb and Montgomery. Your infield...
Try not to get too excited when you see Lamb pitch.
Your infield will be Eric Hosmer at first, Johnny Giovitella at second, Mike Musakis at third, and Lance Awatzky at short. And then the outfield has Gregor Blanco, Lorenzo Cain, David Lau. Lorenzo Cain did not make the team, which surprised me.
It didn't surprise me.
Because
just from watching him,
he just didn't
like. No, I think he was just pressing.
Okay.
He played a lot of he got a lot of A game action and he pressed a lot. I didn't really pay attention to the production. I can just tell how he was going about his game, how he was doing at the plate, how he was doing in the field, and he was definitely pressing. So it's not I don't have a problem with that move as much as I have a problem with, you know, starting Moose and Hosmer at AAA. They're ready.
So it's going to be a fun time. And now let's move on to the West. And I'm going to go with my first bold prediction of this entire series we've done here, Jason.
Okay.
The Texas Rangers will not win the American League West.
I have them winning the West, but I think it's going to be incredibly close with the A's.
I think the Oakland A's will be your American League West champions. I think they've added a little bit of offense on the free agent market. I think the young pitching takes one more step forward. I do think Cahill's going to regress, but I think Gio Gonzalez is going to be better. I think Brett Anderson is going to be way better. I think Brett Anderson, this is the year Brett Anderson becomes a real star. I like their bullpen depth, even though they have some injury histories. I feel like the Rangers, just from January 1st to the end of March, the last 90 days, it just doesn't seem like their year, Jason.
They've had some bad luck.
I know that's kind of shitty, but it seems like things are not going their way. Be it soap operas, be it guys getting hurt, be it whatever, be it not signing guys they wish they signed, any of that stuff. It just doesn't seem like their year.
Yeah, they're set up for some regression too, guys like Wilson and Lewis. But the good news is that this isn't the AL East. You know, they can suffer some regression and still, you know, play a little bit better than 500 baseball and be competitive in that division. I don't think that the A's are going to be able to run away with it. I don't think they're a 90-win team. So I think it's going to be a battle between those two teams. And hopefully, you know, the team that stays healthiest will probably be the team that pulls that out.
Right. I mean, I'm just very concerned about the rotation. I do think Wilson and Lewis will both take steps backwards. You know, Tommy Hunter's already hurt. Derek Holland, I still think he's going to be good, but he's going to be inconsistent. And then, you know, right now you got hurt guys, you got whatever is going on with Brandon Webb, you got Alexi Agondo suddenly in the rotation.
That's a temporary move.
Sure. But
kind of a panic move too.
Yeah. But suddenly it's a weird situation.
Yeah, it is. And there's a lot of pressure because now that they have a target, you know, it was great when you get to lie in the shadows and creep up on everybody and, you know, whatever. But, you know, they have the target on their back this year. Thanks to the former CEO, they did a lot of talking about how they belong in the conversation. Well, now here's the season where they have to prove that to be the case. If they don't win the division this year, then, you know, that's going to be not only a bad thing for PR, because look, they're trying to take over for the Cowboys here. The Cowboys, that's the ticket in Texas, North Texas. Rangers jumped up, went to the World Series. There may not be an NFL season. It's their time to put that brand on everybody. And if they don't win, it will affect the fan base a great deal, more so than the organization itself.
Yeah, and so that's my upset special. I'm taking the A's.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that at all. I pick the Rangers, but I think the A's are going to make it very competitive.
So let's move on. Well, let's do some awards real quick. MVP American League.
Robinson Cano, best player in the American League.
I'm going to go with Adrian Gonzalez. Now that he's out of San Diego and in a place where that will reward the way he hits, he's going to have an unbelievably monster year.
I love Cano's bat speed. I think he's underrated, you know, even in that market. I think that he is just the best.
Okay. Can I go on a limb again?
Yes.
Alex Rodriguez will have the best offensive season on the Yankees this year.
No, he won't.
I'm going out on a limb. You haven't done that yet.
That is a limb.
I'm waiting for your limb.
My limb was the Jays. I came out
I guess
on a
you're
limb.
Right. You did. You, I,
I started this on a
I
limb.
I apologize, Jays. That's a sentence you won't hear a lot. Right. Let's do the National League, Jason. Let's begin with the East.
Well, did you want to do AL Cy Young? Or
do we want to do that? We can do that. Go ahead. Give me your American League Cy Young.
Well, this isn't this. I'm not going to be out on a limb with this, but I think John Lester's the best pitcher in the American League.
I think that's a perfectly fine run. I don't have a problem with that choice. I'm not sure how much I buy it, but it's, you know, I understand what you're saying. I'm going to say Felix Hernandez repeats, and I'll take Lester second.
Okay. I can see that. And, you know, I should also say that, you know, guys like Price and Verlander, I mean, if the Tigers are going to be competitive, I think a guy like Verlander just has to have a money season.
Verlander is the kind of guy who for years, I mean, I'm still waiting, but I still think it's going to happen. He's going to have one of those, you know, 23 and 5 years.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, I still think he
strikes out 260.
Right, he's still going to have one of those years. I just don't know when it's going to happen. But I still believe in it. So now let's move to the National League and begin with the East, because that's where you start. I don't know why. And I'm going to go – well, I'm not going to go on a limb here, but I don't think the Phillies are as good as people think. I still think they're going to win
either.
The division.
I do too.
But they're not going to run away with it.
No, I think the Braves are going to be very competitive. I think that the Braves are actually setting themselves up for a really long run of success.
But they
especially
have.
When Julio gets up.
Yeah, and then there's more coming than that.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, I there's everyone talks about the Phillies rotation, and with good damn reason. But at the same time, the lineup, not so good. You know, Ryan Howard's the only really genuinely scary guy in that lineup.
But is he scary anymore?
Oh, I think he's plenty scary. He's going to hit 40 home runs and walk 80 times. I still think he's plenty scary, as long as you're not left-handed. And then, you know, and then he has trouble, obviously. But if Utley's hurt, I'm not sure they're going to score a ton of runs. I think they're way overrated right now because the starting pitching's so damn good. But I agree. I think the Braves, I think the AL East and the NL East are the same to me in the sense that whoever doesn't win it is the wild card.
I'm with you there. Because the Braves are my wild card pick.
Now my Toronto Blue Jays for you are the New York Mets.
Ooh.
And then everyone likes to make fun of the Mets. And everyone wants to talk about how the Mets suck and the Mets stink and make jokes. And I understand why. I think the Mets could win 81, 82 games this year.
Okay.
And be competitive and be right there.
Who's pitching for them?
Guys. Who can pitch? Now
which guys? Dickey?
It's not a horrible rotation. The rotation is going to be Pelfrey, John Neese, Chris Young, R.A. Dickey, and Chris Capuano. And
yeah, that doesn't scream 500 team to me.
Really, I think that sounds exactly like a 500 teams rotation.
Nope, R.A. Dickey's in it.
That's enough for you.
That's enough for me. Although in the baseball perspective thing, I picked R.A. Dickey as the Cy Young, as
Did
the
you
my number
really?
three Cy Young, as my number three Cy Young guy.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I like fucking with Dickey.
Who doesn't? And now we move to the Central where, I mean, let's face it, we got a situation a lot like the American League Central. Once again, there's some connection here in the sense that no great team, but three fairly even good teams in my mind, at least, with the Brewers, the Cardinals, and the Reds.
I think it's the Reds. I think they're going to run away with it.
I like the Reds too. I think they're going to run away with it, but I'm the guy who likes the Reds too. I'm glad to know I'm not on a limb there.
Oh, no, I think they're great. I think that there are certain young players like Jay Bruce. I think this is his year. This is the year.
I think Bruce is going to have a big year. He's going to, like, you know, Joey Votto is to 2010 as Jay Bruce is to 2011.
I agree. And he's Texan, so
And speaking of Texans,
superior.
again, keep an eye on Drew Stubbs.
Drew Stubbs is
I adore him.
it's just one of the most underrated players in baseball. If he makes I love watching him play center field. He just chews up real estate out there. It's very graceful for a guy his size.
I think he's the best defensive center fielder in baseball, and
I do too. Well,
I think he's better than Franklin Gutierrez.
Gutierrez is, I don't know.
Phenomenal.
It's close.
But I mean, I think Stubbs is the kind is you know has 30-30 potential, especially in that ballpark. Votto's still going to be good. Bruce is going to break out. They have all that young pitching. I think.
Chapman's not going to give up a single hit to a lefty.
I
Watch. One of these years, he's not going to. A lefty's never going to touch him.
the here's this is actually kind of in a way more fun. I mean, would you agree that even if you like the Reds more than anyone else, the kind of the next strata in the Central is the two is then therefore the Brewers and the Cardinals. Would you agree with that?
I think that the Brewers are actually going to really have they're going to be disappointing this year, big time.
Okay, why do you think that?
I just don't see the talent there, to be honest. I just don't see the talent on the field. I don't know how they're going to score runs.
They have Ryan Braun and Cecil Fielder and Prince Fielder and Ricky Weeks.
Well, Ricky Weeks is going to play 100 games, okay? I think that they're going to tank, and I think that Fielder's going to be gone by the break.
Wow. Nice out on
They're
a
going to
limb.
tank.
Way to go
They're
out on
going
a
to
limb
tank.
there. That was nice.
Well, I know you appreciate that sort of thing, so I did that for you.
Now, when you say the Brewers are going to tank, are they going to finish third, or will one of the ugly trio of the Cubs, Pirates, or Astros play better than the Brewers?
That's an ugly ass trio.
Yes, it is.
You know what? I'd like to think that the Cubs will to at least challenge the Brewers. I don't really know. It doesn't really matter. I don't think that the Brewers are going to be in contention this year, so I just think I don't like the moves. I mean, on paper I think it's great, but you know, you're going to lose a month of Greinke. I don't like the offense. I like Braun, of course. I think that they tank, and I think Fielder's gone by the break.
So here's the question. Who finishes in last, Pirates or Astros?
I'd like to say the Astros.
I think so too.
I don't have a good feeling about that team at all.
I think the Pirates are not quite in Baltimore situation, but the Pirates are at least going to be okay in the sense that they're going to win 70 something games and you can go, oh, there's some young players we can get excited about.
Yeah, and they're actually better because they don't have Showalter in the dugout.
What is your problem with Buck Showalter?
I have personal issues with him.
He's not a Texan, is he?
No.
Okay.
I just know some shit about Buck Showalter. Let you know about it
Much
sometimes.
like Michael Keaton.
Very similar things.
Okay.
Very some of the things I know about Michael Keaton are also true about Buck Showalter.
Wow, this is interesting.
Yeah.
And finally, we
I'll
move.
tell you off air.
No, we're going to record that one. We'll move to the National League West with the defending World Series champion San Francisco Giants. I'm going to go on a limb. Giants don't make the playoffs this year.
Oh yeah, they do. Yeah.
I got the Dodgers
They
to
don't go
win
back to the
this year.
World Series, but they're going.
I
You
have
have the
the I
Dodgers?
got the Dodgers. The Dodgers are my I don't know if they're my breakout team, but they're maybe my surprise team.
You think Kershaw finally steps up and just blows everybody away this year?
Well, we'll get to that in a moment when we pick our awards.
Okay.
Indeed. But I like the Dodger team. I think Matt Kemp bounces back. Love Andre Ethier. Love the rotation. Adore the rotation. And I think they're good enough to win that division. And I think the Giants were there was a lot of smoke and mirrors in last year, and I just don't think it's going to last. Anything. I mean, I think they're probably going to finish second. It's them or Colorado, and then you have. I think the Padres are going to be really, really bad. And
I think so.
I like to think they'll actually think they could finish last. But I mean, again, this is not the this is either the problem or the really good thing in the sense that I don't think there's a runaway team in really any division. Now, I think the Red Sox in almost any other division would be crazy favorites. But what we're dealing with right now in every division, there's like a few good teams you can pick out, and that's about it. There's no great team in most division.
No, I wouldn't call the Reds great, but what I will say is that because of the lower tier of that division, they're going to get to play some inferior talent on a regular basis. So I think that if they do put it together and put it together early, I think the Reds can win a lot of games.
So who's your most valuable player in the National League?
I didn't pick them to win the division, but I think that Cargo for the Rockies is probably going to put up video game numbers again. For a division winner who might end up winning the MVP, I think Jay Bruce is going
Wow.
to be the man. Texas is going to step up, do us proud, do the state proud.
I'm taking Albert Pujols just because I think it's the safest thing to do. I mean, he's gonna have another great year, and even if they don't win the division, it'll be great enough where it's hard not to vote for him.
He'll be in the top three, and Cargo probably will as well, and then Jay Bruce will finish first.
Cy Young for me.
Lincecum, and here's why. They're going to score more runs this year. I think that,
He's
Belt's
he
going
has
to win.
not looked good this spring.
I don't care.
Okay.
Belt is going to win the Rookie of the Year. Posey's going to take us another step forward. Lincecum's going to rack up the numbers. I think he's going to rebound. I think he's going to pitch really well. I like him for the Cy Young.
I'm taking Clayton Kershaw.
I figured you would. That's not a bad move.
And I
I'd
think.
want to pick Josh Johnson, but I just don't think that they're going to help him out.
Well, I mean, Felix got away with it last year.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I'd like to think that that's possible because I think Johnson probably has the best stuff.
So, okay, so now we're done. So now you got to pick who is your American League representative in the World Series.
What? I don't know. I think it's really,
Ah.
really, I think it's really, really easy right now to say Red Sox
I'm taking
because
the Red Sox then.
I think everybody's saying Red Sox. Well, I wouldn't be surprised if a team out of the Central does it, and
Well, I mean, we know. Once you get to the playoffs, it really is kind of a crapshoot. It's actually true. But you got to pick someone because it's March 30th, and this is what we do for a living.
well, then the safest pick is to pick the Red Sox. The ballsiest pick is to pick somebody out of the Central.
Okay, well, let's each pick a team. If it's not the Red Sox, then who?
Tigers.
Okay,
Watch, they're
what?
going to finish
I'm
last.
gonna go with the White Sox. And now you're National League champion.
I like the Reds.
I think the Phillies, just because once they get to the playoffs, they shorten that rotation and it's over.
I can see that, of course.
And then your
If
World
they get
Series
there, they
champion.
stay healthy.
Who is your
I like
World
the
Series
Reds.
champion?
I like the Reds.
I do like the Red Sox.
Okay. Well,
It's a good year for commies this year.
it always is.
Take a break, Jason.
Okay.
Now that we've run through the divisions, we'll come back. We're going to talk to Diane Furstner about the weird, wild world of Scrabble. And then we'll come back and we'll talk about our legendary musical guest and talk about what we're drinking. And I will read this card that I received at my door recently. And we'll wrap things up. So stick around. Welcome back to the podcast. It is Listener of the Week time. And joining us from, I'm just going to assume, her palatial estate in New York City, it is Diane Furstman. And Diane is a podcast listener and also one of the top 200 Scrabble players in the world. Diane, welcome to the show.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on. Love the show.
Thank you. And thank you for coming on. We're going to talk about Scrabble here. And I play Scrabble. I have a Scrabble set, and I even have a nice Scrabble set where the board turns and, like, there's slots for the letters so they don't slide around and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to think I'm a pretty good Scrabble player. I think my girlfriend probably beats me 2/3 of the time, and I would call her a very good Scrabble player. But, I mean, just as a difference, is there any way you can kind of give us a sense for the difference between the level we're playing at and the level people who are top 200 Scrabble players in the world are playing at?
The top 200 Scrabble players, or most of the tournament Scrabble players in North America and the world, know all of the acceptable two-letter words, which there are over 100. There are over 1,000 acceptable three-letter words. There are over 4,000 acceptable four-letter words. And then they know what, when you play a seven-letter word using all of your tiles, that's called a bingo. They know all, just about maybe the top 10 or 20,000 seven-letter words to play at any given time.
Now, if you play a game, I just want to get the sense of this. If we sat and played a game of Scrabble, how would you average one or two bingos a game?
Generally speaking, yes. I think
I've had one or two in my life.
Well, there are hints and there are ways you can improve your game. You need to look for prefixes and suffixes in your rack. You know, ER, EST, RE. Rearrange your letters to accentuate the possibility of having a bingo. Generally, most experts will average around two bingos per game, maybe a little bit more. I think I average maybe 1.5.
Now, how did you end up doing this? I mean, many people, you know, you get a Scrabble set as a kid and you play some Scrabble and you play games, and then you do at other times you just kind of make dirty words with the letters and things like that. I mean, how do you go from saying I really like Scrabble to I want to invest some serious time into Scrabble?
All right. Well, I grew up as a only child of a single parent. So my mom and I would play lots of games at home during our quiet time. It could be gin rummy. It could be she tried to teach me how to play bridge. And then I really took to Scrabble as a kid, and I would play it with her, you know, in the evenings. And then we had a Scrabble club in high school because we were geeks. And around the age of 30, I spotted, you know, I was playing with my friends a lot. You know, we would play when somebody came over, you know, when it was, you know, there was quiet time. I spotted a flyer for the National Scrabble Association, which was at the time the sort of the governing body for tournament Scrabble play and club Scrabble play. And my friends were getting tired of losing to me, so I had to find new people to play. So I signed up for the Scrabble Association. I found the listing of clubs in the area, and I found a club in Manhattan. I went. I thought I was hot shit. I lost my first three games by 200 points apiece, and the rest is history. And that was about maybe 17 years ago.
But you've moved on. I mean, you are. Your greatest achievement. You were the 2002 Boston Area Tournament champion.
The A division. Yes, that's just below one of the. Just below the Premier Division. The A Division was just below that. Yeah, so I did beat some good people in that tournament. I was very fortunate. I had good tiles most of the tournament. I drew lots of blanks and the S's and things of that nature. I have had some tournament wins. So, yeah, I think I'm a pretty decent player. It's all relative.
And you won $750, it says here on your little cross tables webpage. Now, you're a top 200 player. When you talk about like the crazy, even crazier than you, when you have like crazy top 10 Scrabble players in the world,
Right.
What are they making? I mean, they're making, I don't know, tens, twenties of millions of dollars?
No, there really is no sponsorship of Scrabble. Most of the tournaments are, the prize monies are funded from the entry fees of the participants. So, for example, the National Scrabble Championship once a year is the top prize is $10,000, and that's only for the top division. So, and then you'll have tournaments where maybe the top prize will be 15,000, and you have 600 or 700 people competing for these prizes. There really is no one who is making a true living out of playing Scrabble. They
Well,
may hustle. They may hustle. They may hustle in the park for dollars, but they're not making a living out of Scrabble.
I mean, let's talk about hustling in the park because there's a documentary called Word Wars, and a certain a significant amount of that does cover a park in New York. You know what it's called, and I don't, because I can't think of it.
It's Washington Square Park. There's a corner of the park that's dedicated to the chess players,
And the
searching for
drugs.
and the drugs. And if you know the movie Searching for Bobby Fischer, a lot of that took place in Washington Square Park. There's a separate corner. The northeast corner of the park is set aside for Scrabble players.
And are they playing for high stakes there? It's just a one-on-one gamble situation?
I wouldn't say high stakes. They're probably playing for maybe $2 a game and $2 a 2 cents a point. We're talking cheap stuff. There's really, I would say most of them are playing for low stakes. Some of them will try and hustle and say, I'll play you for $5 a game and $5 a 5 cents a point or something like that. Like I said, nobody's making a living out of
So
this.
nobody, even in the park, no one's playing for hundreds of dollars a game or anything. There's no poker stakes here at all.
No, there are not.
Now, you are in the New York Scrabble scene, and much of this movie took place in the New York Scrabble scene. And one of the guy in the movie who's definitely the most interesting is a guy named Joel Sherman, who is a fascinating guy, and he's obsessed with Scrabble, and I love anyone obsessed with anything, but a significant amount of the movie revolves around the fact that he has some severe acid reflux issues. And when you sit across the table from him, he kind of just has a bag that he kind of pukes and spits into when you play him.
He's gotten better over the years. His nickname is GI Joel's, and the GI stands for gastrointestinal. And he does have some gastrointestinal issues, and he will be swigging from Pepto-Bismol from time to time, and he may occasionally burp and excuse himself or have to run to the bathroom very quickly. It does happen to him, yes.
And you've played this guy. And this guy's in charge of the Manhattan Scrabble Club or something.
Yes, he is, along with his brother. Yes.
And so when you played him, is that distracting when he's sitting there and spitting and puking into a bag?
No, it's more distracting when he's playing bingos all over the board, beating me by 100 or 200. But believe me, a lot of other people have, more disgusting habits than
Oh,
that.
do share. When you okay, let's talk about some of these people you play.
Jesus Christ,
It's
like
because it's
what?
yes, exactly that. You've made things 10 times more interesting. And this movie was amazing because, I mean, just like anything, I mean, people this much into Scrabble or this much into anything, fantasy baseball, World of Warcraft, I don't care. You're going to get some extreme characters. So let's talk about some of the bad habits you've had of people you've played.
Well, I mean, there's a certain subculture that is attracted to the game. It does draw its Asperger's cases. It does draw from people who maybe not don't have all of the social skills that you might want to have as an adult. I've seen people scratching themselves, picking their noses, talking to themselves, yelling, throwing letters across the table. Storming out, having temper tantrums. There's been some. There's even been fisticuffs at a couple of the tournaments.
Now, are there behavioral rules here, like tennis? Like, are you not allowed to bang
Yes,
your hands or throw a tile?
there is a code of conduct that we have to adhere to. It's part of the tournament rules. If you do not go with those tournament rules, you can be suspended based on a review by the tournament committees and rules committees. So, and we have an advisory board which rules on, you know, bad behavior and things of that nature. We do have people who have been suspended for, you know, abusive language or, you know, various and sundry things. Most of the people are pretty well behaved.
Now, in your last tournament, you played in Albany.
Yes.
And you finished second out of 46 people or something.
Uh-huh.
So what happened? You lost the final. What went wrong, Diane?
Oh, I was leading for most of the tournament, and I played the person just ahead of me. And I, you know, it's just the luck of the Scrabble is really a lot of luck. It just happens to be what tiles you get at what time. And my opponent happened to have both of the blanks during the game, and he had a few of the power tiles, you know, J, the Q, the X, the Z, and he just played a better game than I did, and he happened to win that game, and so I was knocked out of first place at that point, and I had to win my last game to finish second, and I managed to do that. So it happens that way. It Scrabble is indeed, you know, a game of skill and luck. You know, if you have the tiles, you have a better chance of getting a higher score.
And so, I mean, you talked about the power tiles. Now, when I play Scrabble and I reach my hand into the bag and I pull out a Q and a Z, I'm going to say shit. You're going to say sweet, right?
Yes, it helps to know the short words with Q and Z in them.
Can you give us some examples of good short words with Q and Z?
Well, they recently added ZA, Z-A. Which some, you know, California people may know as pizza. So Z used to be a really cumbersome tile to have if you didn't have other letters to go with it, but now all you need is an A. XI is a Greek letter. We have JO, which is, you know, a sweetheart. We have lots of short words with the high power tiles.
And how many words do you know that have a Q but no U?
There are approximately.
Do you really know how many there are?
Yeah, you should. I mean, there's one of the things
you
I
really
will say.
Should.
Yes, you really should, because one of the important things about Scrabble is people think, you know, to the layman, you have to know the definitions, which is not true. Definitions are really not important for tournament Scrabble players. It just takes up space in our brain. The only thing you need to know regarding the word is what part of speech it is, so that you know if it takes an S or an ED or an ING. So if you ask a Scrabble player what this word means, they'll probably say it could be this, it could be that, or I don't know. When in doubt, we usually say it's a shrub, a coin, or a person of some sort. We'll make up a definition because we really don't know, nor do we really care. But Euless Q words, there are approximately, I'm off the top of my head, I'm saying maybe 40.
Wow.
Yeah.
What's the most commonly played one?
QAT. QAT is the most commonly played keyword, except for QI. QI is new to our dictionary within the past 5 years, and it's the chi. It's the life force.
Now, so if you and I sat across the table in the park, and I mean, how many points would you throw on me? Are we talking about, like, you throwing out 500 points or something?
No, even the top experts don't average 500. They're probably averaging 420, 430. I'm averaging probably close to 400, if not just over 400.
And so what's next, Diane? I mean, you just finished the big Albany tournament that everyone was watching on ESPN.
Right.
Where do we go from here? When is the giant Scrabble National Championship?
The next Scrabble Championship will be held in beautiful Dallas, Texas. Let's hear for Jason. In August.
It's not beautiful.
Okay, it's well, fair enough. In August, we should have approximately 500 participants across, you know, 5 or 6 divisions of play. Top prize will be $10,000 to the winner of Division 1. There are separate divisions for based on skill level, so you're not having the 600 rated player playing the 2000 rated player. So it'll be the best against the best in Division One, and the winner of that, the one who wins the most games with the highest spread in terms of points, scored versus given up, will walk away with $10,000.
And
And
are you going to play in this?
I'm hoping to, yes. So I will probably not be in Division One. I hope to settle in with Division Two and actually win some games. There's still, yeah.
Well, keep us updated on how you do.
I will certainly do that.
And you are now the official professional Scrabble player of the podcast.
I will cherish this.
Thanks for joining us, Diane.
You're quite welcome.
Sad little love is dying. I'm crying into my dress, and it will not stop raining. I'm alone with nothing left. The jukebox has stopped playing.
Welcome back to the podcast, Jason. It's time for the goofy stuff.
Okay.
And as always, we start with our musical guest. And our musical guest this week is a legend. Very happy. As you know, we've had lots of people from that are affiliated or just involved with the Electric Audio Forum, really. Steve Albini's studio, which is, of course, located in Chicago. There are many great record companies in Chicago, and we got contacted and in touch with one of the great ones, Bloodshot Records, and the people at Bloodshot, and thank you, said we can use their stuff and send us some stuff. And this is the new solo album from Exene Cervenka.
Ah, wow.
How you like them apples?
I bet you like those apples.
And so Exene is, of course, one of the founders and people behind X, the legendary punk rock band, the late 70s, early 80s from Los Angeles. Their debut album, simply called Los Angeles, is a masterpiece. They did lots of great stuff after that. And she always had a bit of a country vibe to her, and this album is certainly more of a departure, more of a country style album for her. She is as cool a human being as you can get.
Yeah,
and so
heard.
And so Exene Cervenka, this is from her solo album, Bloodshot Records, which just came out. It came out just a couple weeks ago on March 8th. It's called, what is it called? It's called The Excitement of Maybe. And if you are interested in it, just go over to Bloodshot Records. And I'm sure it's on iTunes and all that good stuff. So thanks to Josh at Bloodshot Records. And awesome to have a legend playing music on the podcast. So, Jason, it's about that time.
Okay.
It's everybody's favorite moment, really.
This is not going to be exciting.
And they want to know, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking bottled water.
Explain to the people why you're drinking bottled water.
Because I'm not feeling very well.
What happened, Jason?
I was experiencing some sun-related vertigo type things.
Do you think you have sun poisoning?
I don't know. I don't know. I think I have Arizona poisoning. I think it's just too much Arizona. It made me sick. No, but I woke up this morning and I was dizzy and having trouble focusing. My vision was all in and out. I was shaky. I couldn't find my balance. It's just weird. And I haven't been able to keep food down. So I've just been sipping on water.
I feel bad for you.
It's okay. I mean, I stand out in the sun for 7, 8 hours a day. And I've been doing so for 34 straight days. So I'm lucky that I didn't get sick before. I've been relatively healthy out here. Just been working my ass off, but now I'm for some reason, maybe because I knew I was going to be flying home and everything was going to be over. I woke up this morning and I was just crushed.
Ugh. Well, I'm sorry. Well, thank
but,
you
so
for
I'm
doing
drinking
the
water. Of course. What are you drinking?
I just have Coca-Cola. I'm very boring. It's a boring, what are you drinking? We've had exciting ones. We've had boring ones. This is a 2025 what are you drinking episode.
Yeah, it was bad. I mean, I'd like to make it more exciting by maybe tipping back a few beers, but I just can't.
I'm going to make it more exciting now, Jason, because we're going to go on to This Just Happened. It's a new segment called This Just Happened. And a girl just parked her car in the bank parking lot, which is next to our home, kind of, and walked up to our house and threw a small envelope into the mailbox.
Weird, of course.
Very weird. And I got the envelope, and the envelope said simply said, Mr. and Mrs. Goldstein, with Goldstein spelled G-O-L-D-S-T-I-N-E. Now, if you are a listener to the podcast, a long-time listener, you will remember the early drama with when we found a cat, and we found a black cat, and we named it, and we liked it, and then we took it to the vet, and it turned out it had a chip, and we had to give the cat back. You remember this, Jason?
Yes, I do. I listened to you.
So here is the contents of the card. Dear Mr. and Mrs. Goldstein, again, G-O-L-D-S-T-I-N-E, last fall you found my black cat for me. I am planning on moving and cannot cover the cost of moving them. Before I go on, Jason, how much does it cost to move a cat?
I don't know. I've never actually heard that before.
You just go to PetSmart and you get a carrier and you put the cats in the fucking carrier and you put them in the seat of the car and you drive to where you're going. Right?
Well, that's usually how I transport. What are the cats?
Let me know. Am I missing something? Am I doing something inhumane by putting a cat in a carrier and that's how I move a cat?
Yeah, I put them in a carrier and get on the subway.
Yes. This is what cat carriers are.
Move a cat.
Cat carriers are, yes, it's not the cost involved in moving a cat. I know you love cats, and I was wondering if you were interested in one or two cats. I know this is probably a long shot, but I knew you found Mowgli, which is what they named it. We named the cat, of course, Kuro-chan, which means little black in Japanese and is totally 10 times more awesome. I know you found Mowgli charming. They are both well-cared-for, fixed cats. Please give me a call if you or anyone you know is interesting. Thanks for your time, Ellen, and then her phone number.
You're the neighborhood crazy cat people.
Potentially we are, Jason.
People are coming to you with their experts.
Right, you're correct. As you know, right now in the house, there are two cats. There's Pickles, who's been here for a long time. There's Underpants, who we got when we couldn't keep Kuro-chan. And then there's Otto the Pitbull, who's just a big fat idiot, right?
Yes.
So we have these three mammals in the house already. And so Margaret, being the sane person she is, then of course shows this to the kids, and the kids are like, "Oh, get the cats!" So that just happened.
That's good. I like the segment. I like the segment idea. Because you never know what's going to happen when I get back to Brooklyn.
Right. This could be a new segment. That just happened. You guys are talking about something that happened today. Oh, I have another one. You ready? Let's continue. That just happened. You know what? You know who I got an email from today?
Me.
Jeff Juden. Nothing for me on that. I'm sitting there and there's an email from Jeff Juden.
The baseball player?
The ex-6'7" first round pick, yes.
Well, I was waiting to see where you were going to go with this.
Well, I went with it is after a few emails I asked if he'd come on the podcast. I don't want Albert Pujols on the podcast. I want Jeff Juden on the podcast. I don't want.
Did he just email you out of the blue?
Pretty much. He found me on LinkedIn. I don't want Justin Verlander on the podcast. I want Jeff Juden. I want Jeff Juden to come on and talk about being the 12th pick and what went right in his career and what went wrong and the struggles of throwing strikes when you're big and stuff. That's fun. That interests me.
Is he going to come on?
I don't know. I haven't heard back from him after we exchanged some emails, and I sent him an email and said, you should come on the podcast and we should talk about this. I said, I'll warn you up front.
I think
front.
Pujols coming on the podcast would be great as well.
Who's that?
You said you don't want the Albert Pujolses of the world. Well, no. I think that would be a really good guest as well.
I don't think that would actually.
You could do, I think it would be great.
So that just happened.
That's good.
I have a third that's what happened. And this is frustrating because I cannot go into too much detail on this. But I think it actually becomes more interesting if I just read the email, okay? If I without context, you know, going into context, and we'll go from here, okay?
Okay.
So I got this email today. Let's see here. Kevin, Could you send me a real script of what you want to perform? It doesn't have to be too long. I just want to get a sense of the real thing for when we do this on stage. So that just happened.
Wow.
I've had a hell of a day, Jason.
That's incredible.
Jeff Juden, scripts, found cats. It's crazy.
Wow. I wish I were drinking right now. Make things a lot better.
So let's move on, Jason. I know you feel like shit. So what you got going on this week? I think the best thing you might have going on this week is a flight the hell out of there tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I had an article come out on BP today about the Royals, and I'm going to probably just keep writing about the Royals until you guys tell me to stop. I have final minor league game tomorrow.
What's your final game of the year? Or what's your, or the spring, rather? What are you wrapping up with?
Let me see. Am I getting my schedule out? I am going to be watching – I'm going to be watching fucking San Diego again. God damn it. Yeah. So I'll be watching Jeff Decker, you know, take a walk. And
how's he looking physically? Is he looking like he's in at least kind of decent shape?
No. Okay. I don't see. I wouldn't put decent on it. I mean –
He's in some kind of – he is a shape.
He wears a uniform. He is a shape. He wears a uniform. He's got a good approach. You know, he definitely has some power in his swing. Don't really like the hit tool.
I really like the hit tool. I think that's all he is, though. I think, you know.
I don't know how it's – see, the thing is I like it on the backfield. I don't know how that's going to play.
I think it plays pretty well. I think he's going to get to the big leagues and just kind of be a hit-only left fielder kind of guy.
I don't know if I don't think he's going to be a regular. I don't see that. Yeah, get to watch Rizzo again. I've seen him a little bit. Fuentes, guys like that. Maybe Kelly, but I doubt I'll see Kelly. So yeah, that I'm going to close with that. And then my flight leaves at like 10:30 tomorrow night, and so I get to fly into snowy New York. I just hope my flight's not delayed. Because that'll make for a long day. And then I'm going to sleep for a couple of days.
That's a good call. You and I have very opposite weekends planned.
Yeah, you get to go do something very, very exciting.
I have a whirlwind going on. Tomorrow, I'm going into the city. And at 5:30, if you live in Chicago, I will be guesting on Chicago Tribune Live on Comcast Chicago. And
nice.
Sitting with the fine folks there and in high definition talking about the upcoming baseball season. And from there,
are you going to wear the hat?
I'm going to wear the hat. Absolutely. Sure. I'm heading north from there to a bar right near Wrigley Field called Sluggers. Very original name. And they're having an opening day party that Christina Carl is going to be at and has helped put together, I believe, also. It's a opening day party that is being hosted or founded or by Equity or Equality Illinois, that of course Christina plays a big role on, and that, and by equality I mean equality for the LGBT community, and it's, there's going to be prizes and it is to use a term from the LGBT community, it is a straight friendly event. Minnie Minoso is going to be there, and it's just kind of celebrating opening day, and we'll be there talking to people about baseball.
Cool.
And then Friday I'm getting in a car, I'm driving to Kansas City.
Good for you.
And that's turned into a fun time because I was obviously looking forward to going to the Royals game and more importantly, the Royals Futures game. And then let's just add it to this just happened. You know, like 3 hours ago, I got a phone call from Joel Goldberg. And Joel is the host of Royals Live on Fox Sports on the television. He kind of hosts the pregame and the postgame show, Royals Live. And it turns out he's a big podcast listener. Big fan of the podcast. Likes you. You make him laugh.
Of course I do. I'm funny.
And so then he sent a message and said, well, if you're going to be here, come be on the pregame show. So I'm going to be on the pregame show on Saturday for the Royals.
Lucky.
Game. Lucky. And so I have a whirlwind weekend while you relax.
Yeah, I need to relax. And I had a shitload of scouting reports to write. And then I turn around in like 10 days.
You're going
2 weeks.
Going to day after. Correct?
Yeah, I'll be down there for 2 weeks.
So we're going to do at least one show back from New York, right?
Yeah, we hopefully get two in.
Okay. So
hopefully get two in, and then I'll be in Mexico.
So knowing that you will be in New York next week, and knowing that you do not feel well, Jason.
Yeah.
It's time for you to say goodbye to the internet.
Goodbye. I'm excited about saying goodbye. Goodbye.
And we'll talk to you next week with Jason in New York. Thanks for listening, everyone, and enjoy opening day.